You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Beautiful music. Beautiful music, I beg your pardon. Beautiful music that we're sharing here on the Mid-Morning Empowerment, and that was Soul Influence. And now we're getting into our conversation with Mercy Manyema. She speaks to us about mental health in the next generation, all right? Because we know that with the pressures of social media, with academic stress, rapidly changing worldviews, you know, today's youth face unique mental health challenges, and early intervention and support can make a lasting difference. But are we doing enough to help them? That's the question that we're asking. By understanding the struggles that young people face, we can better equip them with the tools and the resilience that they need in order to have a healthier future. So Mercy Manyema will be joining us for this conversation to guide us through and help us understand some of these issues that we need to understand that are facing our young people today. Mercy, good morning. Welcome back to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us once again for yet another very relevant conversation. Speaking about mental health in the next generation, let's start here. Let's start by understanding what are some of the mental health issues that are commonly facing the young people today.
I think one of the big ones is anxiety.
Right.
Anxiety generally is when you have a sense of foreboding or extreme worry about what's going to happen in the future, because young people are at a place where they are leaving home, starting their own life, trying to decide where I'm going, finding themselves, so to speak. So there's a lot of anxiety associated with that, compounded by expectations as well that we have of them as families, as society, as churches, and their fear that they are not able to live up to those expectations. And sometimes anxiety is also associated with depression, where sometimes a young person feels like they're hopeless, they're helpless, they've looked at the challenges, they've looked at themselves, and they feel like they really can't, they're not able to bear up with that. So I think those are the two big ones that we see in young people.
Would you say that the anxiety is any different from the anxiety that maybe someone in my generation, maybe 20 years ago, leaving home, might also have felt? Isn't that just a normal thing to feel anxious about leaving home and trying to figure out how this whole independence thing works? Isn't that a normal kind of anxiety? At what point do we say that, okay, this has reached a level where it's not healthy anymore?
Yeah, I think there's a general anxiety that you do feel, and some of it is to be expected. But I do think that nowadays the comparisons are so much more. The expectations seem to be a lot higher.
Right.
And sometimes young people feel pressure that may not necessarily be there, primarily social media. Because on social media, you see everybody's best day.
Yes.
And you compare your best, other people's best days to your worst day.
Your worst day.
And yeah. And so,
yeah.
It's, I think nowadays the anxiety can be compounded by that, because now the expectations are not just from their own home and family, but from the whole global village, pretty much.
Yes. That's actually leading to the question that I was going to ask you next about what role social media and technology actually play in impacting young people's mental health. There's the on the positive side, you can say maybe it helps people to connect. It makes the world a smaller place. We're able to see what, you know, how other young people are doing in other parts of the world and all of that. But at the same time, it can also create, like you're saying, that comparison, feeling like maybe I'm not doing as much as I should be as compared to my peers. What would you say about that? For some people, it's motivational. It helps them push harder. For other people, creating anxiety. How do you balance that?
So I think the first thing with social media is that sometimes there's this false sense of connection that you have, where you feel like you have 1,000 friends, therefore you're connected to 1,000 people. You're not. So then where you should be getting some social support in with real life people, you spend a lot of time on social media with people who hardly there for you,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
They're hardly there. And like I said, on social media, you always post your best day.
Yeah.
You post your best day. And so when you actually need someone and you are in trouble, there's nobody there. And I've heard so many stories of people who were very active on social media and then they committed suicide. And everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
Can you look at their last post? There was nothing there because you're not really connected to these people that you think you are connected to. So that's the first thing. And then there's also the thing of the pressure. The things that people post, you don't know what they've had to go through to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many untold stories. They'll always tell you the finished product. They take the picture at the peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. They don't show you the sweaty and grungy days they had to go through to get there.
True.
So that's those are the main dangers with.
Hi, Mercy. It seems like we're having a problem with our connection there. Mercy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Okay. My network has been.
Okay. We've got you back now. We can hear you. All right. So my next question is going to be about schools and the role that schools play in promoting mental health awareness among students. What role would that be?
So I think schools are very good places for intervening. The first thing, it would be a school counselor. I don't think there should be a school that does not have some kind of mental health practitioner. Mm-hmm. Not a teacher who doubles, but a person who's dedicated to just sit and listen to the things that young people are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the awareness is also opening up the environment for young people to speak. And I think part of this is really the...
Ooh, having problems with our network there. Mercy, are you there? Mercy Manyema is speaking to us about mental health for the next generation. Right now, she was speaking to us about the role that schools can play in, in promoting conversations and mental health awareness among students. And we've just got cut off there. So let's see if we can reestablish that connection. So she's speaking about the importance of having a mental health counselor specifically for that. That is their specific assignment, taking care of the mental health of the students, not a teacher doubling up as a mental health counselor, but also but specifically someone whose role it is to take care of the mental health of the student and of creating that awareness among students. Mercy, do we have you back on the line?
Yes, I'm back.
Right. So you were talking about the roles that schools play and the importance of having a counselor in the school.
Yes, and I was also going to talk about just the general culture in our schools where we don't view children and young people as just to be seen and not heard. Speak only when you're spoken to.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to start creating environments where our young people can come to us even when they've messed up. Because that's also a great source of stress for young people. They've made a mistake. They understand they've made a mistake. But there's not a conducive environment for them to say, look, this is what I'm going through. I started smoking weed. It's a problem. I need help. And I think schools are good places for that. Our homes also. But if the home is not able to provide that environment, the school, the teachers can create a safe space to say, you don't only come and speak to us when things are well, even when you yourself have actually made a mistake, come, let's talk, let's help you.
Beautiful. And that's actually one of the worst things that happen, I think, to young people, especially teenagers, is when they make a mistake and try and fix it on their own. That's when the worst things happen, when they try and sort it out on their own. So you spoke about families as well being a safe space. How can families foster open conversations about mental health with their children?
It really has to start with us adults being comfortable with our own mental health issues. And we struggle quite a bit with that. We are trying. I can't say all hope is lost. Mm-hmm. We are trying, but we ourselves struggle. You find in families, when we have a family member who has a mental health illness, we find some other explanation for it.
Yeah.
We can't just sit down and say, this person is bipolar,
yeah.
they have schizophrenia, or they have depression or dementia or whatever. So it starts with us being aware of our own struggles, because we actually do have our own struggles. And as we open up about those, or we are aware of those, then we can also allow our children to speak about their own.
Mm.
One of the hardest things in counseling young people is when a young person comes to you, they have a problem, and you realize they need their family, but they tell you, if I tell my parents, this is the end of the counseling altogether.
Hey.
So it's hard. Yeah. I think we need to raise our own awareness and understand that having a mental health, whether it's a condition or just stress that you're going through, is not a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. Admitting that is not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength. It's like when you break your leg, you go and get help. You get a plaster cast on it. You get pain medication.
Right.
And it's just the same with mental health right. challenges.
Right. Do you think that the problem with, the way that the family might receive counseling, or the just the idea of their child going for counseling or the family getting involved, is it one of those that's like, no, why do you want to put someone in our business? We need to sort out our things on our own. We don't need an outsider. I feel that's what I'm hearing.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there's also that, there's that belief of what, how is a stranger better able to handle our issues
yeah.
than us as a family? That's number one. That's, there's also, we don't want people in our business.
Mm, mm.
It's our business. We'll deal with it. And there's also, it will tarnish the perfect image that we
yes.
are putting out there, that
yes.
with this perfect family, we're getting things right and we are okay. And yet, like I said, mental health challenges are just like breaking your leg, dislocating your arm.
Yeah,
sometimes yeah. Sometimes you do need to get help.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But it's a journey, it's a process. We can't pass judgment because it is a journey. It really is a journey. Because to be honest, also there is a lot of stigma around mental health issues.
Still.
It starts to be about, what have you done wrong? If you are a believer, you don't have enough faith. Have you sinned against God? And also the whole thing of, oh, we thought you were so perfect. And now look what's going on with you, you know. So there is a lot of stigma. So it's understandable why people would not want someone else in their business. I have to say also, in the past, sometimes you do hear people who counsel or who help people using their actual cases as anecdotes in conversation or in sermons.
Yes.
Yeah,
hey.
That's quite harmful.
Hey.
That's quite harmful. So it can be scary, you know, it can be scary. Sometimes people would then decide, if I live in Joburg, I'm going to get a counselor in Limpopo.
Right.
Because then even if they talk about my story, no one will know.
No one knows who they're talking about. I've heard.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've heard. Sometimes, you know, you're listening to a sermon and it's very interesting. And you hear when the pastor starts talking about, you know, this couple that I counseled, or this family, or this person. And you're thinking, yeah, what if that person is in the audience right now in the congregation?
Yes.
Or if this is
yeah.
being broadcast maybe on YouTube or whatever, the digital media. And you're like, that's going
yeah.
out to the whole world. Ugh. Yeah, I understand that. I understand the
yeah,
hesitancy.
It's I mean, there's a way of using the stories without pointing at a particular person.
Yes.
So you can aggregate. Yeah, you can aggregate them. You can really speak to them without actually even mentioning that it's a case that you
yeah,
see.
Yeah. And then the
yeah.
other thing I think is, especially when we're talking about young people and mental health, I think there is, I don't know if this is still the case, but I feel like there's been this idea that what could you possibly be stressed about? What anxiety could
yeah.
you possibly? You're
yes.
a child.
Yes.
Like, all your bills are paid. What are you?
yeah.
What are you stressed about? You just
yeah.
get to live here,
yeah.
eat and sleep. What's your problem? So, could we touch a little bit
yeah.
on that? Like, our understanding of kind of we kind of have this struggle Olympics. Like, I'm the adult. I'm the one who goes to work. I'm the one who has to deal with all this. And
yeah.
How can you be stressed?
Yeah. True. I remember seeing a TikTok video where the parent is saying to a child who's depressed, but I bought you a new blazer just last week. Why are you depressed? And it's this idea that as long as we provide materially for our children, you're in a private school, I drive you to school, you eat well, then you should be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But our young people face a lot. And the environment has changed. The expectation on them has changed. The things they have to resist have also changed. They can still, you know, overcome and resist them, but they have changed. I remember when I was in high school a few decades ago, we made fun of you if you smoked weed.
Yeah.
So you were the odd one out you were doing drugs.
Yeah.
But nowadays that's kind of shifting. It's different now. When you're vaping is cool. It was you who were the one who stuck out if you were engaged in premarital sex and promiscuity.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, yo, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's kind of different.
Yeah.
The society is looking at it differently. So they're facing so many challenges, and we are still expecting stellar performance from them. We're still expecting stellar performance from them. And so they have a lot to stress about. And their schooling, their exams, their tests, that's a lot of stress because they're also thinking about their future. Sometimes we think they don't think about their future. We're the only ones who are concerned about what they're going to be. They are too.
Yeah.
They're also concerned about their dreams. Am I going to be able to achieve them? Am I going to disappoint my parents? That's a big one. Am I going to disappoint my parents? So that causes stress. So although it's different things that they're stressed about, it's stress nonetheless.
Right, right. Makes sense. And definitely we have to be more open to understanding that. It's not the same. And the funny thing is that this used to happen to us when we were younger. If we had any kind of pressure or stress, and our parents would be telling us, you know, I used to walk 10 kilometers with no shoes to get to school. So then, like, we were the crybabies, and then now we're looking at the young people like they're crybabies. So, the cycle just keeps repeating itself. Now, as we're wrapping up, what initiatives or resources could better support youth mental health?
I think one of them is to support parents with their own stress management skills and healthy coping skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the other big stressors for young people is parental conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And parents don't think that their kids can see that they are being passive aggressive with each other, or dad is cheating, mom is cheating. They can tell. And so supporting parents with their own mental health issues and stabilizing their lives.
Right.
That's number one. Teaching parents to connect better with their children. And letting them understand that this young person is becoming an adult. Treat them that way. You can't treat an 18-year-old like they're 8.
Right.
And it's not spoiling them to treat them that way.
Mm-hmm.
For the young people themselves, creating spaces where they can talk to each other as well as to trusted adults. And I'm going to come back to a point I raised on Monday, that the church is at such an advantage for providing this. Safe spaces for our young people. And I find that sometimes our churches chase out our young people based on how they're dressed, the color of their hair, what shoes are you wearing to church.
Yeah.
And I always challenge parents and say, if you don't want your purple-haired child in your church, where are they supposed to go? Where are they supposed to go? So providing them safe spaces, counseling if they need it. Provide counseling, whether it's at school or a church. There are some who can afford to pay. There are some who can't.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are important resources to make available for our young people.
Right.
And providing them spaces to express themselves, whether it's using their talent, their art, their hobby, because that helps a lot when they put their hands to work. It also puts their minds at ease. It helps to distract them.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's a church, community service, projects, giving them work to do in the church, in the church board, or at school, clubs, and extracurricular, it keeps them busy and out of trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Mercy. Really appreciate your time. I guess my final question would be, what would be the result of not paying attention now? When the next generation grows up, when they are the adults of tomorrow and all of that, what would be the results if we don't sit up and pay attention now and start making those changes and start being intentional about minding their mental health and just spreading that mental health awareness? What would be the results of just sitting back and saying, hey, it'll be what it'll be?
Yeah, so sometimes young people find unhealthy ways of coping with their stress or with their trauma or pain. So that's alcohol, that's drugs, that's promiscuity. So they harm themselves. And then they enter into adulthood with so many disadvantages.
Okay.
Or some actually physically harm themselves because it's too much to deal with. Some attempt suicide, some succeed. And if they don't succeed, you then end up with dysfunctional adults who are not able to cope with their daily lives, who then become disruptive wherever they are.
Yeah.
And they can't function well in their workspaces or they are stunted emotionally. And then you end up with these people getting married and having children of their own, and they can't regulate their own emotions. Everything that's associated with that. So it's a big cost. Yeah.
I hear that. I think that's a sobering place where we can end the conversation. For those who might be thinking, I'm so sick of these conversations, like, let it go. I just wanted us to end with that. Just put that picture in mind of these dysfunctional adults who don't know what's what, who don't know how to regulate their own emotions, who don't know themselves, and much less having the ability to know another person on an intimate level. That's the disaster that we're breeding if we don't pay attention to this now. So thank you so much for that, Mercy. Thank you for coming through and for your insights on this matter. God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless you all.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.